You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on GG. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine, wherever it is, whatever you're doing right now, at this very moment. You have chosen to listen to the sound of my voice, and you are making us part of your day, and that is very meaningful to us. We really enjoy that, and so thank you. Even as you take your shower, which a lot of you continue to tell me that you do this, and thanks. Make sure you get you miss the spot. Yeah, there. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for taking us in the car, to the gym, wherever. We are the Rain and Jays, normally John Corrales. That's me. That's who I am normally. Normally with Jay King or Sam Packard, but it's just me tonight because I'm going to have a conversation here with Frank Madden, who is the creator of Brew Hoop and one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast. Celtics Bucks Thursday night game, second time they've played in the first couple of weeks of the season. We knew what happened the first time. The Celtics had the Bucks right where they wanted them and blew a fourth quarter lead. So the Bucks are just crazy right now with Giannis just going nuts. Giannis is going nuts. And you guys know I like Giannis. Not just because he's Greek, because he's also awesome. And so I'll get into all of this stuff with Frank, the whole feeling with the Bucks. Like, this is new for people in Milwaukee. And so it's kind of weird for them to have an MVP candidate just stepping into the beginning of what may be a long run for an MVP candidate. So a fun conversation with a fan, a long time observer, blogger, podcaster, journalist covering the Bucks, to get his sense of the team, what we might expect from the game, and just the general fun conversation. So here it is, me and Frank Madden. All right, Frank. So we've done this once already before this season. So Celtics, Bucks, the return, the revenge game. What are we going to do about Giannis?
You know, I've been thinking about if I was another team, which thankfully I'm not having to view it from that perspective. But if I were an opposing coach, you know, it's interesting. A lot of the tendency is to try to put, you know, more mobile kind of, you know, 3-4 combo forward type guys on Giannis, and, you know, guys who have a little bit more foot speed, at least, that can at least stay in front of him from the perimeter. But, you know, especially this year, he has become such a load in terms of his ability to catch the ball, get into the paint, and just pound guys. Or, you know, like we saw against Portland over the weekend, you know, Evan Turner tried to just sit back basically and play off him and try to dare him to shoot. And it's like, well, then you just let him get a running start. And with those long strides, you know, if he gets his shoulder even with you, he's just too long and big and strong for most little guys to have any kind of chance. So it's tough, but I think playing like a little bit bigger guy might be worth a shot, to be honest, just because we haven't seen anything else really work. I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they tried to put, you know, if like a team like the Celtics, for instance, like if you tried to put Al Horford on him, because he's done so much damage kind of basically walking into post-ups and then, you know, face-ups, kind of those type of actions from 15 feet out. You know, Al had a couple plays where he really challenged Giannis. I think he blocked him at least once in the first game. You know, used at least Al having, you know, big man length, at least made things a little bit comfortable for Giannis around the basket. So I don't know, maybe that might be an option. And obviously, you know, the normal caveats about, well, you know, get everybody back on defense and set up a wall and all that other stuff. I mean, you know, easy to say, but more difficult to put into practice. So, I mean, again, I don't know if there's an easy solution, because, again, if you just give him room and try to dare him to shoot jump shots, the Bucks are trying to put, you know, shooters around him all the time now. So, again, if you try to send those extra bodies, Giannis is getting better and better at finding those open shooters. And again, the Bucks are not, you know, the Rockets or the Warriors in terms of, you know, having shooters around Giannis, but, you know, they can at least put enough guys out there to make you pay. And certainly in that first game, we saw that with Matthew Dellavedova hitting a big shot when Giannis felt some pressure coming late in the game. So I don't know if there's an easy solution, you know, trying different things and yeah, maybe going a little bit bigger is one way to do it. You know, just trying to put more bodies between him and the basket. But as we've seen so far, it's easier said than done.
Yeah. See, now, I love Giannis, not just because I've got the Greek flag on my Twitter account, and, you know, we get to claim like this awesome player and say, yay, I've got his Greek basketball jersey. It's like the one jersey that I can have that's not a Celtics jersey. I can be like, all right, it's cool, you know. And Milwaukee has generally been like benign. Like, who hates Milwaukee? Like, nobody, right?
Yeah, you can't hate us. We're
Yeah. Right. I mean, everybody, like, Milwaukee's just a very benign team. There's just whatever. Now, of course, now that you're going to be good, people are going to start hating you because you're like, you're going to start winning a lot. But Giannis has been the safe. I haven't tweeted it out. Like, please, everybody, leave Giannis alone. Like, and people got back to me with, like, Tim Duncan. Like, we've already done this once. Like, give him the Duncan treatment. Like, he's such a good kid. Like, I just, leave him alone. I want to see a pure, unadulterated superstar, just lovable career out of him. My only problem is that the Celtics have built this team that has been, I mean, I obviously can't speak for Danny Ainge, but we've all who follow the team say, you know, waiting out Cleveland. And now Giannis is doing this. We're like, whoa, no, bullshit. Yeah, that's not supposed to be happening over there yet. Like, you're not supposed to be making this leap. But I mean, from your perspective, because this actually, I think, would shed some light, we hope, on what we hope Jason Tatum will become, what we hope Jaylen Brown will become. You know, we're all tantalized by the first four games of the season. Like, ooh, these guys are pretty good. Watching a guy like Giannis, who went 15th in the draft, progress over the years and now become this. I mean, for lack of a better term, I can't come up with a better question than, how does it feel?
Talk to me about, yeah. Yeah. You know, and honestly, it was funny because, you know, looking at Jaylen and Jason, I can't help but think a little bit back to a couple years ago when, you know, Jabari and Giannis were kind of in a similar situation where they were, you know, in that they're, you know, they're basically the same age. So, you know, 19 and then 20 years old. And obviously Jabari's had, unfortunately, these big injury disruptions to his career so far. But, you know, when those guys were healthy, and especially before Giannis kind of really took his big leap, probably in, you know, really the spring of, I guess it was, 2016, I guess, after the All-Star break, he really kind of broke through and the whole point Giannis thing started, and he put up, I think, like 19-9-7, like two blocks, two steals, you know, just sort of started to doing the stat stuffing thing. And Jabari averaged 19 a game, kind of really found himself after coming back from the ACL injury. And so there was sort of this general sense of like, wow, these guys are both like figuring it out. And, you know, Middleton was also kind of doing similar stuff at the time. So I'm like, okay, this is kind of the core. And so it's been, I mean, having the one superstar guy who you feel like is, you know, going to be an MVP candidate for, you know, pick your time, you know, period of time, right? Like, you know, the next 7, 8, 10 years, hopefully, fingers crossed, is incredible, right? Especially in Milwaukee, where, you know, I've been a fan of this team. I moved to Wisconsin in 1989 when I was 8. And I guess I've just been bad luck, because basically immediately thereafter, the team just, you know, has been irrelevant and gone past the first round of the playoffs once and, you know, won 50 games once in, you know, over 25 years. So having a guy that's like a centerpiece that is, you know, in the conversation for, okay, this guy can be the best player in the league. This guy, you know, could be the guy that, you know, any GM would want to start a team with. It's just amazing. And also just like the kind of kid Kitty is, you know, like what you're saying. I mean, you have to love him as a person. Like, we've seen him in Milwaukee kind of grow up and go from this kind of wide-eyed kid to, you know, a man who is still, you know, has like is fun-loving and all that, but he's very serious about his craft. And, you know, he deserves it, right? Like, he's put in all the work. He's got incredible God-given talents, but he's put in the work as well, and you kind of expect him to continue to do that. So you just feel great as a fan just to finally have somebody like that and finally have – like somebody you can legitimately kind of pin your hopes on to maybe take this team to something approximating a championship contending level. But certainly there's still a lot of work to do, and you know, they're going to need either a lot of internal improvement from other guys or some way of adding another star or two to, you know, feel like you can compete with certainly what Golden State is now. But, you know, like you're saying, you guys were obviously been kind of positioning yourself to compete long term, you know, even after LeBron leaves the East. You know, I think certainly the Bucks are, they're kind of at the inverse, I guess, what you know what I say. And I'd be interested to see your view of this, because, you know, you look at Kyrie and Gordon, those two guys, you know can be second and third all-stars on a super team, like incredible team, right? What the Celtics don't have is like a Giannis type guy, right? Who's going to be that like two-way, just completely dominant type guy. And the Bucks are in the opposite boat, right? Like, they've got Giannis, but they don't have two other guys right now, especially with Jabari being just a huge question mark. I mean, there's no other, you know, two guys you'd say, oh, those guys can definitely be all-stars or, you know, give you a Kyrie level performance in the playoffs. Like, I mean, there's nobody else like that on the Bucks. So I don't know. It's all kind of like honeymoon for us right now, because like we were just hoping to get good this year. And we're kind of wary of that, but I don't know. I mean, it's like this year, if they don't win a playoff series, it's going to be disappointing. So it's interesting. I mean, expectations are finally here, and that's kind of uncharted territory for the Bucks.
All I got out of that is, it sounds like you just want to give us Giannis Antetokounmpo and we'll be fine. So thanks.
If we could just pool our resources, the Eastern Conference might actually win a championship in the next 2 years.
That's all I took out of that. It sounded like you wanted to give us Giannis.
The green team. Just make one green team.
One right? Green team. Yeah, I'm in. It's funny because you look at, you mentioned Jabari Parker. And I remember the Parker Wiggins draft where people were just like, which one? Who do you pick? And people were, I remember the tanking that year and all of that stuff. And it's unfortunate that Parker has gotten hurt because he has so much promise. But you forget that Parker was supposed to be the star. Like, he was the guy, and Antetokounmpo was supposed to be the secondary guy. And now they right. flipped. Which is just kind of interesting to see how you guys are going to put that together. The Bucks are super, super interesting to me because of, first of all, you lucked into the superstar. I mean, you really did. It was luck. There, he went 15th in the draft. 14 other teams passed on him, and that was the Anthony Bennett year. So if you redrafted that, he's on the Cavs. So I don't know, like, when you get a superstar in the draft, you're usually picking 1, 2, 3. Like, when the Celtics picked Tatum, you're just thinking like, all right, here we go. Like, they even traded down for him. But when you pick that guy, you're like, I'm expecting a guy that's going to be a key piece to a future championship. And just the expectations are so different, or were so different in Milwaukee when you drafted Giannis. And now here you go. It's like, boom, you know, 4 years in. Okay, I guess he's our guy now, and you figure out who you're going to build around. I will say this. I'm very happy to have listened to your podcast and have you guys, for once, be the ones talking about trade rumors whenever some guy's name comes up, because for the past few years, it's been Boston. But like, Boston's finally not involved in stupid bullshit Eric Bledsoe trade rumors. Like, there's some cursory, like, should we? And then it was immediately shut down, and no one's really bringing it up again. And it was just kind of funny to listen to you guys spend like half an hour trying to figure out, like, could we? What about this guy? Well, not this guy. I'm not ready to give up on Thon Maker yet. So I don't know. I just find Milwaukee's situation unique. So first of all, you're not really going to trade for Bledsoe. I don't see Milwaukee doing what it would take to get Bledsoe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, what is the asking price that's actually that it will ultimately be enough for Eric Bledsoe, right? And my view is, if you know it's going to be a discount like we saw Paul George ultimately go for, or you know, even like Carmelo, right? And obviously I'd say Carmelo is a more polarizing guy than even Bledsoe. But you know, if there's a way, and this is the thing I find so fascinating, especially with Bledsoe being sent home and, you know, chaos sort of reigning in the desert. I mean, what is the best offer they're going to get for Eric Bledsoe, who, I mean, when was the last time Eric Bledsoe was in a situation where he was actually being asked to play at a high level? You know, I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think just the way that the last season was basically lost because they just didn't want him to play, which is why I don't really blame him for being disinterested in that franchise. And they've seemed to have a track record of, you know, just kind of being disillusioned with guys, or guys being disillusioned with them on the way out. So, so I don't know. I mean, my view is like, if you can get that bargain deal, and maybe in this case, it's a first round pick and, you know, basically some salaries, but none of their kind of what I would say kind of core-ish guys, which obviously would be like Giannis, Jabari, Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton would be second, by the way, not ahead of Jabari at this point. But, you know, Giannis, Jabari, Chris, Brogdon, Thon. Probably that's it, really. I mean, the Bucks are a little weird because they have sort of their starting five plus Jabari. I mean, Snell, obviously, you would move, but not that he has some huge value. But other than that, they don't have really kind of like peripheral pieces that like you could tolerate moving, but that would definitely have value. Like, I mean, Phoenix doesn't want DJ Wilson to add to their, you know, coterie of rando power forwards, you know. So it's kind of hard, like, to make, I think, something work on paper. So I think it's like, I would just view it from the perspective of like, hey, give them a first round pick plus salary filler. And, you know, unfortunately, the Bucks have enough bad salary on their books that it would probably cause a bit of a strain next summer. As far as like what's going to happen with Jabari, which is a huge question mark, and kind of keeping this franchise, this roster together. But yeah, I mean, my view is like, just be opportunistic, because again, like at some point, I don't think the Bucks win a title just kind of putting it in cruise control from here on out and just expecting Giannis to drag them to the promised land. Right. I think they're going to need something good to happen beyond, you know, Jabari getting healthy or whatever it might be. So I think that's the sort of mindset I would take, not just to Bledsoe, but to other deals as well. Like, just, you know, go fishing and see, maybe, you know, circumstances align themselves. I mean, what is Denver going to give up a bunch for Eric Bledsoe? I mean, is Emmanuel Mudiay actually worth very much at this point? Is that better than a mid first round pick? I don't even know. I mean, maybe there's somebody who feels that way, but so yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not like I'm definitely not saying, oh, bet the farm to get Eric Bledsoe. His fit isn't like perfect by any stretch. I would much rather have kind of a gunner shooter type guy at the point than Bledsoe, who's obviously much more of a, you know, driver and kind of just, you know, I don't even know. There's a little bowling ball athlete type point guard. But again, at some point the Bucks have to get better. They have to add more talent. And you know, you just look at certainly teams like the Celtics, and obviously for the moment the Cavs. And it is interesting too, though, because, you know, having 2 years left on his deal, normally I before the season I would have said, well, I don't know if that aligns that well with the Bucks window. But I don't know, opening night happens, and you know, I'd put it to you how you guys are kind of viewing this, because, you know, watching opening night, watching the Cavs kind of, you know, mope around with Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose starting, and Isaiah being months away from coming back, and who knows what he's going to look like. And, you know, all the questions around the Cavs and their ability to motivate themselves and play any defense whatsoever during the regular season. And then you add on to it that the Celtics, who are the team that actually, you know, beat them to the East regular season, you know, crown last year, you know, goes out and you guys obviously lost Gordon Hayward on opening night and are going to have to be, you know, playing some pretty young guys. So I don't know. I mean, part of me was kind of thinking like, Jesus, like if this Giannis thing continues as it has, and, you know, the Bucks can get, you know, some of the supporting pieces to really mesh well, and they actually can play a little bit of defense. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to win the East this year, but I think they at least have a much better window for being in that mix in the next year or two than I might have previously thought. So, you know, maybe then you do get a little more aggressive trying to add a guy who's maybe a short-term piece. But I don't know. I mean, what about you guys? I mean, you obviously expected to maybe not win a title this year, but at least compete in the East for, you know, certainly a conference final spot, maybe a chance to go to the finals. I mean, how does this sort of change, I guess, the expectation setting and kind of where you guys kind of viewed this year versus next year versus the year after?
Well, I think the initial reaction is, you know, you see Gordon Hayward go down right away, and initially you say, well, season's over. Like, that's it. But you don't.
It's the East.
Right, it's the East. At 6 minutes into any season, you can't say anything is over, really, unless maybe you're the Knicks. But you don't really have a full understanding of who you have on the team. And 6 minutes into the season, we had no idea that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were going to take these strides already. That Jaylen Brown especially has been kind of a revelation. Like, he has taken a lot of the stuff that he's done over the summer when he was in Vegas. He was just driving relentlessly into triple teams. Like, even when you say, why is he doing this? He looks terrible doing this. He's turning the ball over. But I compare it to, you know, spring training baseball, where a pitcher might be working on his curveball and he's throwing the curveball over and over again in non-curveball situations and maybe giving up a home run here and there. And you're like, God, he looks terrible. He's giving up all these home runs, but he's not playing the way he's playing. He's working on a certain skill. Now, he's kind of started to put a little bit together. Against the Knicks, Jaylen was finishing a lot better than he has been. That's the one knock that I've had, is that he's getting to the rim but not finishing. But it's also the Knicks, so you never know when that's going to – is he going to get to the rim and finish against the Bucks? I don't know. But you didn't know that he was going to do what he did. You didn't know that Jason Tatum was going to take the summer league stuff and build on that and actually do, like, non-rookie things on the floor. So there's two players there that are doing things above and beyond what we thought. So – when you look at the East, I see Cleveland still going to be what Cleveland was last year. That they're going to coast. They're not going to really kick it into gear. They're going to be a two seed, maybe even a three, for all we know. I think Washington is super, super motivated, and I think they're probably going to be what the Celtics were last year, and they're going to go balls to the wall, and they're going to get the top seed. And then after that, it's kind of open. Is Toronto going to put it together? Is that Serge Ibaka fit going to really work? How are they going to progress? How are the Bucks going to come together? How are the Celtics without Hayward? Are they going to keep doing this? Are they going to figure it out? Look, we haven't had Morris yet for the Celtics. Marcus Smart only played basically a game and a half because he rolled both ankles in that Bucks game. So, are the Celtics going to be able to make up for the loss of Hayward and still kind of roll along and challenge for that, you know, 50 low to mid 50 win total? You would say no without Hayward, but you never know if other guys are going to step up and make up for his lost production. So it's just so early to say where we think the Celtics are going to finish, because there's just so much out there that hasn't shaken out. Like, what are the Pistons going to be? Like, are they – they shouldn't be good, but, you know, they just got Avery Bradley. Is he going to give them a boost? You know, what are the Hornets going to end up being? How good will Philly end up being? Are they going to make some stupid run? Is Embiid going to stay healthy? Is Simmons going to stay healthy and do what he does? So many question marks that it's hard for me to pin where the Celtics will end up. My best guess would say fighting for home court, that fourth seed with either Milwaukee or Toronto, and just kind of go from there. Right now, that's kind of where I would project them out. Like I said, Washington probably first, Cleveland probably second, and then us, you, and Toronto kind of, however the season progresses and whoever stays the healthiest and who gels better than others, that's how it's going to kind of shake out. It feels like to me.
Yeah, one thing I found so interesting heading into the season, you know, I was trying to look at the cluster, right? And we talk obviously about the top four coming into the season in the East. The teams you mentioned, the Bucks, I felt like were kind of that like fifth team probably. You know, I mean, I could see them being a home court team coming into the year, but I didn't think, you know, it wasn't something I would bet on. You know, I felt like, okay, they're like, you know, in a tier by themselves, kind of at five. And then there's like that cluster of question marks, you know, in sort of 6 through 10 or something like that, let's say. And one of the things I found interesting was, you know, I think I was looking at Basketball Reference. I don't think So there wasn't any, none of those teams were top 10 defensively last year. Like all of them had at least phases where, you know, had major question marks defensively. Cleveland, maybe the kind of, you know, most notoriously, because obviously they had, they were the presumptive Eastern Conference, you know, team to come out to have to play the Warriors. So they were kind of under that different microscope. The Celtics, obviously, at earlier parts of Brad Stevens' tenure, have had a very good defense. Last year, maybe not up to where they wanted to be. And, you know, I was just looking, obviously, this is like super low sample size. You know, coming into this game, Bucks are another team that has been bad defensively and a lot of question marks around Jason Kidd's sort of schematic preferences and the aggressiveness they have. And, you know, they're still struggling to kind of figure themselves out and play at a higher level of defense. I mean, again, early, very early, but Boston is a top 10 defense right now. I'm very curious to see kind of where you guys end up. Obviously, Marcus Morris has been hurt. You know, he's another guy that figures to give some potentially good minutes, some defensive versatility at the forward spots, especially because you got two very young guys there right now. I mean, I've only watched a little bit of obviously Tatum and Brown this year. I think Tatum's impressed me just because the fact that he's like actually getting rebounds and blocking some shots. Those were things I wasn't sure about. You know, you see like kind of a lot of these guys who are sort of in his, you know, kind of combo forward size to they get to the pros, especially given that he doesn't have a ton on his frame right now and they kind of struggle with that stuff. So that seems like kind of a positive thing. But, you know, defensively, you know, obviously we know what Marcus Smart can do. Question mark is whether he'll be ready, I guess, to play on Thursday against the Bucks. But where do you kind of see this team grading out? I mean, you know, people always talk about obviously the Brad Stevens offense and coming into the season, obviously everybody talked about Kyrie and, you know, he's had a bit of a slow start, obviously, and kind of how Brad Stevens would maybe unlock him a little bit. But, you know, when you view this team and obviously a lot of question marks, how this is going to play out over the rest of the season. But I mean, is this a team that you look at and say, this is going to be still an offensively focused team and defensively they might have to just sort of get by and maybe be average? Or are you seeing things that would suggest that this can actually be a very good defense and this team maybe actually gets by possibly as much or more on defense than offense?
Well, you know, before the season started, I would have said that it's going to be offensive heavy and defense kind of shaky. But and that may still be how it pans out because we're in – currently in small sample size theater.
Right.
So we don't know exactly how everything's going to finish because the Celtics have played Philly and New York as well as Milwaukee and Cleveland. So obviously Milwaukee, we gave up 108 points. Cleveland, we gave up 102. Funny, when you play the Sixers and Knicks, you give up 92 and 89. So all of a sudden the Celtics defensive rating has them right now, after four games, seventh in the league. But that, how sustainable is that really? Well, you look at what the Celtics have done defensively. There are a couple of things stand out. They've done generally okay against opposing bigs. Again, we played Philly against Embiid, and Embiid had a terrible game. Porzingis had a terrible game. But small sample size, is it because Embiid is just surrounded by not great players that or players who aren't fully sure of themselves yet? They're not great yet. That the Knicks are not surrounded by very good players. That Porzingis is not surrounded by very good players. So you feel good double and triple teaming a guy like Embiid or Porzingis, and just whatever happens, happens. You can live with the results. What happens when you play San Antonio? They're, you know, coming up, or I don't know, New Orleans, even with all of their size. So yet to be determined. But they've done good. They've done good jobs on the opposing team's bigs, and Tatum and Brown have been just much better than expected defensively. They're forcing live ball turnovers and getting out into transition. So that's something that I certainly didn't expect. You know, you lose Crowder and you lose Avery Bradley and you say, Jesus, our defense is going to take a huge, huge hit. But I'm not saying Jaylen Brown has made up for the loss, but, you know, it's not as big a sting, I guess, the way he's defending. He's defending really, really well, and he's forced a couple of steals, and he's gotten himself out there in transition. Tatum has gotten his hands on in passing lanes and stripped a couple of guys and blocked a couple of shots. His awareness on defense is surprising, so maybe they might be a little bit better than I thought defensively. Now, without Hayward, they lose a monster floor spacer. because I've seen plays in the preseason where they just put Hayward in a corner and run this action from the top of the key that forces a defender to just stay in his jock. And now they've got two-thirds of the floor to play a four-on-four game, and all kinds of options open up there. And eventually, somebody's going to get over-anxious, and you can still spring Hayward at the end. That guy doesn't exist now. So there's no knockdown, catch-and-shoot, you know, super crazy offensive threat. Unless you start playing Kyrie Irving off the ball, which they've done a lot more, and that's kind of like been their adjustment. So their offense is still not fluid, and you can see in the, after four games, they're in the middle of the pack, 16th out of 30. So I feel better about their offense improving moving forward than their defense staying where it is. So I still think that their offense is going to be where they win more of their games. But they are better than I thought defensively. And let's look our two teams. That Milwaukee game, that was an opportunity the Celtics kind of blew. That the Celtics had a chance, they had the lead, and they got outscored by 12 in the fourth quarter. Would that have been different had we had Marcus Morris? You know, you put Morris on Giannis, do things change at least a tiny bit, a little bit? Enough for the Celtics to stop a run rather than let it continue. Unfortunately, we don't know the answer because we're going to play you guys twice without a key perimeter guy and a guy that we would probably have on Giannis a lot.
Yeah, and I'm curious if Smart is ready to go tomorrow as well, just because, or tonight when people hear this, because he shot really poorly. I think he missed a bunch of free throws, but he was, I mean, it's amazing. It was kind of similar, I think, on opening night against Cleveland, where he took Kyle Korver down in the post and just kind of ran him ragged on a few straight possessions, and you know, ends up drawing all this attention as a post up, you know, 6'4" point guard combo guard type guy, which obviously is just sort of a weird thing that teams aren't used to seeing, and you know, especially the Bucks, who are notoriously over aggressive in doubling the post. I mean, Smart was, you know, causing all sorts of havoc by just drawing attention, even though he didn't shoot particularly well in the post. And obviously we know what he can do defensively. So I'm curious kind of what happens there. And, you know, the guy that I was really impressed by in the opener, I mean, Kyrie Irving was probably the worst point guard who played in that first game between these two teams. You know, Brogdon played well. Delly played actually pretty respectably. And Terry Rozier looked great. And I'm just looking at the numbers, and it looks like, you know, again, that maybe that's not a fluke. He's putting up really nice numbers, shooting the ball well from three. You know, he's obviously been, as an opposing fan, it's always been a little bit like a Twitter joke about, you know, Danny Ainge not being willing to trade Terry Rozier for, you know, Anthony Davis straight up or something. But, you know, looking at kind of the way he plays and what he can do as a scoring guard, and he's distributing as well a bit as well. So, I mean, it's not like I want to pigeonhole him into just a scorer, but do you think that's for real? I mean, he's shown obviously flashes of this in the past. I mean, I'm a little jealous, to be honest, because I think a lot of Bucks fans would love to have a guy off the bench who can actually create his own shot a little bit and score. And, you know, one of the things you always complain about is Malcolm Brogdon and Matthew Dellavedova and them having these, you know, Revolutionary War muskets of shots that take forever to load up. And, you know, if it's like 24 and a half feet, they're going to front rim it every time. If it's like 23 feet, 10 inches, they can make them. And I don't know, but Rozier looks like he, I mean, is this a breakout year for Terry Rozier, do you think? Are you surprised by what you've seen from him? Or I don't know, was it just a randomly good game that I saw from him when they played the Bucks the first time?
No, it's not been random. He's had a pretty good season so far. I mean, all of his numbers across the board, by any measure, he's having a much, much better season than you would expect, on top of averaging 11.5 points, which is basically double what he averaged last year. He is playing more consistently, and we've seen the slow progression with Rozier. That, you know, his rookie season was a typical rookie season, was not great. His season last year was up and down, to say the least. He had a great preseason last year, and his postseason last year was really nice. He had a really nice playoff run when the Celtics really needed him with Isaiah out. So all of a sudden in the playoffs, he averaged 12.5 points a game. and he stepped up his shooting. He stepped up his production across the board. He's always been a really good rebounding guard. He's been a surprisingly good rebounding guard, and he puts up tremendous rebounding numbers for a guy who's 6'2". But it's a little shocking when you look at it. But he's averaging about 6 rebounds a game. And so it's after the postseason that he had and the preseason that he had this year, we were kind of wondering out loud, like, is Terry ready to do this? And the one thing that I said here on the show, and Jay and Sam agree with me, is I gotta see it from him. Like, it looks good. The preseason looked good. The everything that we saw coming into this looked good. And we're like, I'm not ready to believe in him yet. But now here he is after 4 games. Everything, his shooting is phenomenal. I mean, I'm looking at his statistics right here. His true shooting percentage last year, 46.6. This year, 57.6. You know, his assist rate has gone up 7 points. His steal rate has doubled. His usage has stayed the same. So all of these things across the board, he's so far really, really stepping up. Now, when Smart gets healthy and Morris gets healthy, what ends up happening is now the minutes that Shane Larkin is getting and those other guys, Abdel Nader, those minutes go away, and those minutes go to Rozier. And suddenly that end of the bench starts feeling a little bit better than it seemed going in. So, yeah, I would say that the early returns on Rozier say this could be a potential breakout year for him. And good timing, too, because we really kind of need a guy like that, a guy in the perimeter to break out. I mean, there would be really 2 breakout seasons between Rozier and Jaylen Brown, who after, you know, it's his second year in the league, but if this kid can come in all of a sudden and start averaging 20 or close to 20 a game, that's amazing. So things that we didn't expect but are really nice happening right now, I guess.
And funny, you know, you mentioned the rebounding, Terry Rozier. He had a higher defensive rebound rate, not by a lot, but he did over Thon Maker last year. So Thon's got, I think, 11 inches on Terry Rozier.
Thon is literally twice his size.
Yeah, and Terry Rozier has a much better defensive rebound rate this year than Thon so far, who's had a slow start. So, yeah, he's an intriguing player. And, again, that's sort of, I think, one of the challenges for the Bucks right now is you know, you feel pretty good about how some of the kind of key pieces fit together. You know, the starting five, I think, complements itself well. I mean, I think we're still waiting to see if Thon can make kind of a more steady, you know, more clear progression from where he was last year. I've never been a guy who's viewed Thon as like a really big upside guy. I view him more as kind of a high floor motor character, you know, fits well because he can stretch the floor as a big and also, you know, defend pick and rolls and switch and do stuff like that. But that's kind of a big question, you know, is can Thon kind of make clear steps this year? Can Brogdon obviously continue to improve from where he was a year ago, even though he's an older kind of young player, let's say, relative to his draft year. And, you know, that's sort of one of these things, like, can the Bucks find, you know, a guy like that? Can a Sterling Brown, who hasn't really played much yet, can somebody step into, maybe not doing exactly what Rozier is doing, but, you know, even if it's not this year, next year, can you know, some of these guys who are really cheap, like DJ Wilson, right? Like, what's his role going to be? Can any of these guys sort of step into roles? And not that anybody's expecting them to be Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, but, you know, can they be at least one of these kind of complementary pieces that, you know, clearly, well, you know, and I have to admit, on opening night when I saw, you know, Semi Ojeleye and Daniel Tice and Shane Larkin and you know, Nader and all these guys kind of getting minutes, my first thought was like, wow, Celtics. Once the Celtics lose a couple guys, like the lack of depth is, you know, there's definitely not a ton of depth right now, and obviously a lot of young guys, but certainly, like, yeah, I think what you're talking about, Jason and Jaylen, I mean, that's, it seems like that's really the upside for this season, right? Even if the best case scenario is, you know, going to the East Finals and getting blown out by the Cavs or the Wizards or something like that, maybe just because there isn't enough depth this year. If you can win, I mean, that's the thing, right? The Bucks, I mean, winning a playoff series would be massive in Milwaukee, right? That's something that hasn't happened. And obviously that was a breakthrough the Celtics had, right? Getting Brad Stevens getting through the first round and getting to the East Finals was huge. And kind of a Bucks are sort of, you know, trying to do that this year is at least get that that playoff experience. And obviously for guys like Jaylen to have gotten that a year ago as a rookie, Tatum, if he can obviously get some good playoff experience this year and play really big minutes all year with, especially with Hayward out, that's kind of, and I've heard people say that, like, wow, this could be, you know, a blessing in disguise that Hayward's hurt because, you know, these other guys are going to play well. I don't know. Like, I just can't say that after watching what happened to Hayward, because you just never know how a guy's going to come back from something like that. But clearly there are some silver linings there. And, you know, for the Bucks, it's, you know, kind of the question, which of their young guys can kind of make those clear strides this year? Because, you know, I mean, it's the reality of the NBA. I mean, you can find a couple of really good players and then you have to pay them a lot of money. And then you got to find more guys to step up on cheap deals and kind of fill out that roster. So we'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward. I'm really bummed that I can't be in Milwaukee for this game on Thursday. I'm not sure how much Celtics fans are aware of sort of the throwback stuff that's happening in Milwaukee, but the game taking place, the old Mecca Arena and the old floor that was used in the Mecca, they did a replica of it. And if people haven't seen pictures of it, I think it's going to look really cool. And the throwback jerseys are going to be out from the 71 Bucks team that won the title. And I guess the Celtics don't need to wear throwbacks because you guys just never change your jerseys.
Yes.
But
the Celtics will counter with some weird alternate, probably.
Yes. Yeah, maybe. Right. So some weird thing to just throw it off completely.
Long sleeves.
Yeah, exactly.
Wear the hoodies out there.
Yeah, at least wear some short shorts or something like that. That would be nice.
Jaylen Brown will help with that.
I was going to say, Jaylen Brown, I feel like he wears some shorter shorts. DJ Wilson from the Bucks hasn't really seen much game action, but he's worn short shorts going back to his days at Michigan and is not afraid to show a little thigh. So shout out to DJ. He will be at home in his throwbacks tomorrow night. But yeah, it should be a fun game. And, you know, again, I think from a Bucks perspective, you know, stealing that game in Boston on opening night for the Bucks, you know, you just at this point, you know, especially with the Bucks having so much continuity, obviously the Celtics in a very different situation with the Hayward injury on top of that, you know, so much turnover that you know, Brad Stevens is having to figure out, certainly for the Bucks, you know, you have the benefit of continuity. How do you take advantage of that and maybe bank some wins while teams like the Celtics are dealing with injuries and trying to kind of, you know, figure some things out still maybe with the rotation. So we'll be interested to see tomorrow, see if the Bucks can, you know, again, kind of turn the trick for a second time. And at a minimum, it should be a fun sight with the old arena and the old floor and the throwback jerseys. And we'll see if Giannis can continue his incredible streak to start the season.
Yeah, I mean, it has been an incredible, incredible start to the season for him. And like I said, people are probably sick of me, like, kind of openly rooting for him because I just think he's just so much fun to watch. And I don't want him to beat the Celtics, but he's such an anomaly. He's like DeRozan plus Durant. Like, it's DeRozan's heavy reliance on twos with Durant's like super freakish length and ball handling ability for a guy that size. It's a hell of a mix. And, you know, I've always said, and not just me, everybody always says, if this dude can figure it out from three, man, watch out. The NBA is in a lot of trouble. But let's pretend that the Celtics in this game figure out a way to contain Giannis. Who has to step up? Who steps up and would beat the Celtics if Giannis doesn't?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Chris Middleton is the obvious guy that, you know, is the Bucks' second best player. He, you know, he's one of those guys who you know, has had some shooting struggles to start the year. He's been a slow starter at various points in his career, so maybe not a total shocker, but he's a guy that, you know, he has a bad shooting night and you look at the box score and even though he doesn't make flashy passes, he ends up with, you know, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, gets a couple steals, leads the team in plus minus. And you're just like, what? It felt like he had a terrible game. And still Chris always seems to be on the good side of, you know, the score line at the end of it. And so I think Chris, He's really struggled with his 3-point shot in particular to start the season. I think he started 1 out of 11 or something like that. He got going a little bit in the last game. They tried to get him going early, going to the basket a little bit. I mean, he's not like a driving guy. I was fascinated to see him get a couple of layups in transition against the Celtics in the opener, just because he's really not kind of an open court type guy. He's not particularly fast with the ball. He's not great athletically, but I think for him in particular, you know, every year Bucks fans wish that he would shoot more threes because he's always right at 40%, but he never shoots a ton of them, and he's got a pretty quick trigger. He seems like, especially in the preseason, he was trying to get up more threes. He seems to want to do that, but they just haven't really been falling. Obviously, you feel like it's only a matter of time for a guy who's, you know, hit 40% over his career. So he's a guy that if he can kind of rediscover that outside shot a little bit, he had a huge three late in the game against Charlotte, so you hope that might be something that might kind of get him out of his slump a little bit. But again, he does a lot of things really well, and if he's shooting well, then he's such a valuable weapon to have alongside Giannis. And probably the other guy too, you know, Malcolm Brogdon played well in Boston against Kyrie. He had another couple good games last weekend before having to sit out on Monday's game with an ankle injury. So Brogdon, you know, again, I think Celtics surprised, seeing some of Brogdon's better performances. He had that really nice game where he hit that ridiculous shot against Avery Bradley last year late in the season in Boston to help the Bucks win a game as well. So he's kind of one of those steady guys. And you know, again, when he's knocking down threes, which he's doing so far, he's so important because, again, not flashy, but his versatility, ability to kind of complement Giannis as a guy who doesn't need the ball to be effective is really important. So those two guys are obvious. And then, you know, the other guy who's been really up and down, Greg Monroe, was arguably the Bucks' second most valuable player last year. When you factor in the fact that Middleton and Jabari missed so much of the season, Monroe was just great for them off the bench. You know, again, guy who the second units just relied on, and the second units were really good. I mean, he was an awesome plus minus guy last year. He played a lot better defense than he historically has. And he's just, you know, a guy that you can go to and get buckets down from the elbows or in the paint. And he's been very up and down so far to start the year. Basically last weekend against Cleveland, in Portland, like, basically wasn't able to stay on the court, had all sorts of problems, stopping offensive rebounds and pick and roll coverage, just things like that. Played a little better on Monday, but he's one of those guys, like, when he's right, he's really valuable. And then other nights, you know, you're just like, dude's a dinosaur. You know, he just doesn't seem like you can play him in the modern NBA. So it'll be interesting to see kind of if Greg can maybe get into a little bit more of a comfort zone, because certainly, especially as an anchor of those bench units, so many of their best lineups last year involved Greg and Brogdon as well. They had a really great combination. They're able to play off each other very well. They always talk about, you know, coming from sort of Georgetown and UVA, kind of very kind of fundamentally sound schools with cutting and backdoor passing. So hopefully those two guys can combine a bit more than we've seen so far. And certainly if you get, you know, those three guys playing better, or at a minimum getting 2 out of 3 of those guys playing at a pretty high level, that obviously makes Giannis's job a lot easier. And obviously, look, I mean, I have no idea, right? Did I think Giannis was going to average 37 points a game in the first four games? No, I didn't. You know, did I think Giannis could average high 20s? Yeah, I thought he could do that. So it'll be interesting to see just, you know, how sustainable Giannis's incredible scoring has been. He's been just, you know, dominant as an ISO scorer, which he was not last year this good. And his strength just is seemingly at another level this year, and guys are just bouncing off him. So hopefully he can continue to do that, but we'll see. Obviously, you wouldn't begrudge him if he had, you know, a 20.9 rebound game at some point, because yeah, Lord knows the guy's human. So
I would like to see him actually just have a good game, not the most dominant game ever.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say he will not shoot 66% from the field for the rest of the season.
No. Well, yeah, the 13 out of 22 he shot in Boston was his worst shooting game of the season so far. So that tells you where the bar is right now. So it's going to be pretty hard to keep doing that every game.
You know, my immediate reaction to that, and this is a total Boston reaction, is just to say, screw you.
Let us have this one thing, Joe.
No, that's it. You can have a nice thing in Milwaukee.
Thank you. That's good. Let's meet in the East Finals. Hey, let's just do it there, right?
Sure. Let's
root for an all green East Finals. Everybody's happy.
I think that'd be a fantastic finals. That'd be a lot of fun for the right to go get destroyed by the Warriors. But hey,
we'll take it at this point. Yeah, exactly.
All right, everybody. Bucks, Celtics, by the time you listen to this, tonight, Thursday night, TNT, big throwback game. So it's going to be fun just to watch for that. Frank Madden, guys, Frank is just the best. Like, he's one of the OGs, man. Started Brew Hoop. He's been around forever. Been following his stuff forever. So give him a follow on Twitter at FMaddenNBA. And it's just, anytime you want to know anything about the Bucks, Frank's your guy. Frank, thanks for chatting with us for about an hour here.
Absolutely, man. It was fun, and hopefully we'll have to, you know, get this crew back together in May, I guess. In May, yeah, let's do that late May. Let's have some Bucks Celtics previews in May. I'd be down for that. I haven't had to do any game previews in my lifetime as covering the Bucks in May. So I'd like to start doing that. So let's see if we can do that.
We could do a series preview. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. Nice. There you go.
That'd be nice. All right, Frank. Thanks a lot, man.
No doubt. Tanya, take care.
Always fun conversation with Frank. Again, he's one of the OGs. This guy's been around forever. Started Brew Hoop. Give him a follow on FMaddenNBA on Twitter. And just follow his stuff. Listen to the Locked On Bucks podcast. If you're interested in the Bucks, they subscribe to them. Or any of the other teams, we have a podcast for every team in the NBA. If you just want to dip into the Bucks or whomever else you want to listen to as a kind of get a sense of what they're doing, what they're talking about before the Celtics go in and play them, there's a Locked On podcast for everybody. Of course, if you're not a subscriber of our podcast, please do that. Join in the fun. We're here Monday through Friday. We're the only Celtics podcast to give you a daily Monday through Friday show. And we are here for you just with all the big stuff. So subscribe, rate us 5 stars, let people know, leave a little review. It's very important to us. I can't stress that it's very important to us, because that lets other people know that they should subscribe. And if they subscribe, then our numbers go up, then advertisers pay us more money. And we're trying not to do this for free. We work hard on this. We do. No, seriously, we do. Stop laughing. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.